Podcast Network, AfterBuzz TV, over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hello, everyone. And welcome to the Americans After Show, Season 3, Episode 9, Do Male Robots Dream of Electric Sheep? I am Adrienne Snow. You can follow me on Twitter and the Instagram at Miss Adrienne Snow, M-S-A-D-R-I-N-S-N-O-W. And here's the rest of my panel. What are your names?
You could follow me at MattRitterComedy.com on Twitter. MattRitter1, and don't follow me into my apartment because it was just broken into.
Oh,
maybe
no.
It's because I said it on this panel.
It was an ordeal.
That's because I said you could follow me into my apartment. It was probably somebody from...
Somebody
very literally.
That's why you don't make jokes.
Yeah, you don't joke around about...
Don't joke around about burglaries. It's not
that's
funny.
That's Matt Ritter, by the way.
Yeah. Exactly. Followed you in just to let you know, why don't you know what necklacing is?
Yeah, oh, that's why. It was somebody giving me the business.
Anyway, sorry. Yo, Adrienne. I am at Twitter at Radio TFB, and you can also find me on Joshua Trinan.
And what's your name?
I'm Josh Richmond.
Thank you. Like, you can follow me.
Hi, Josh.
Hi. I'm Ben Bateman. You can follow me at Ben Bateman Media at Instagram and Twitter. On Instagram, I'm at, but we can just move on.
Yes. So, with that said, as always, please subscribe to us. I just almost fell out of my chair on YouTube. SoundCloud. Which is a goofy night tonight. And iTunes. We love to hear your thoughts. We do read everything. Like, sometimes... to the point of
everything.
Ouch. I'm so sorry. I'll apologize for being born in 1986 and have no idea what necklacing
is. It's your fault. It's your fault.
It's my fault because I was born like right at that weird time where I didn't comprehend what apartheid was until after it ended. So
I was born in the 70s and I just apologize for not remembering everything about European history.
It's unfortunate.
Eastern European history and South African history.
But we hope you accept our apology and we can move on from it and go on.
To be clear,
to the
we're
rest
all
of the show.
Big fans of this show.
We are huge
we
fans.
We watch the show and then we review the show
immediately.
And sometimes
afterwards,
we ingest content about the show in the week leading up to it, but we don't necessarily read about every piece of history that relates to the show prior to watching the episode.
Yeah.
Not always. So that's just one thing.
We try as much as we can.
Yeah.
We bring as much historical context as we can.
More than the history.
Yes.
Yes. I'm a big fan of television, fictional accounts of history. I'm not that big a fan of actual
history. But look.
But with that said.
Particularly tonight, man.
First thoughts.
I have been waiting for this episode ever since I saw the title spoiled on IMDb because it's a Philip K. Dick reference to Male Robots Dream of Electric Sheep. That's awesome. This episode did not disappoint. For sure my favorite episode of the season so
far.
I'm going to go one step further. Favorite episode of the show. And I think I said that a couple episodes ago. I felt like, and that was an argument at the time, like that was the most exciting. This was pound for pound for me, not even close, the best episode of the show. Like I'm going on record, it's going to get nominated for an Emmy.
I would go one step further and say Lois Smith, start polishing your Golden Globe or your Emmy for guest star. Mm-hmm. Do the Emmys do that or just the Globe?
It'll be a Creative Arts Emmy because she's not a...
Yeah.
I'm going to go one step further than all of you and say the entire Americans production will win the Super Bowl this year.
Wow. What's the score?
Wow. 45-0.
Nice.
Nice.
Over Louis.
All right. Yeah. Well, great, you guys.
Are you going to go one step further, Adrienne?
You know, I'm not that competitive. I'm not trying to top y'all. So I'm not going to.
We're at that step. We've just decided. There will be a lot of awards for this episode.
Comedy works in threes. No need to complicate things.
When it's time for us to all go to the pearly gates, the Americans will be let in first.
That's right.
Legitimately, there was this was such an intense emotional episode.
Mm-hmm.
There was a really unique structure, I think. I think you started and ended with some intense moments, but in between, it really got long and meditative and was willing to kind of hold. I think it all tied together thematically really well. It really worked for me.
Yeah, it was a beautiful show.
I was crying the whole time.
I was in tears. Yeah. I was like looking around. I was like doing the thing
inside.
Where I was like,
oh,
inside.
Okay.
I was
inside.
Crying on the outside.
I just have no heart. There was no tear.
Nothing? Did you feel it inside?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. A little bit. How about you?
Yeah. But only on the inside. I am a man.
Oh, okay.
Hey,
so what you guys are saying is that I don't have a website and I cry during the show?
No, I cried a little too. We looked at each other. We had a moment.
Nobody's judging the tears. I'm hollow inside. So with that said, shall we move on to the topic of Martha?
Yeah.
So everyone, what did we all think of that first introduction of her into the show, this episode?
I think this was a fascinating turn that took me by surprise.
Yeah.
And I think the best way to show somebody that you trust was a huge buzzword mm-hmm. on this episode. I think the best way to show somebody that they can trust you is by volunteering spy information.
Yeah. That was, I guess when she said, now I know. I was kind of like, what do you know?
You know nothing.
That you love me.
Okay, is that what you needed? Okay. Okay, girl. Okay.
I mean, I'll say that, like, or before that scene, when Philip was talking to Elizabeth, and Elizabeth was saying, you got to do something now, and Philip was saying, wait, because I trust her.
Yeah.
I was saying, you trust her? Really? I mean, kind of nuts. But he turns out he was right.
I mean, they've been in that. When Gabriel called it the Martha operation, I was like, oh, I've just never really thought of it like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's been in that operation for what, going on 2 years
now. Couple years, yeah.
So I would feel like there would be some level of trust, and it was a strong, an interesting testament to Martha that she chose to be loyal to Clark. You know, even though now she knows she has no idea who this man is, she has no idea what his history is, and she's probably never going to know, she still decided to say, hey, I'm going to be loyal to you, we're going to have a nice dinner, and I'm going to tell you where you can put your next bug.
I also think that in a way, you know, if I'm Martha and I'm processing this, and I made the decision to let this person continue to be in my life as a stranger, how do I bring him closer?
Right.
Mm. That's what she's trying to do. I mean, that was the nice dinner, you know, the voluntary information about this, the male robot. I think it's her way of saying, I want him in my life, but I also want him to truly love me. So how do I do that?
I wonder that, too. I wonder if she's playing a longer game. It's entirely possible.
She might be. She might be playing him.
I thought this was really a fascinating turn early in the episode, because the first line is Elizabeth asks him, how do you know she won't say anything? And his line, as you said, is, because I trust her. So obviously that's like first, it's a statement on her. It's also a statement on Elizabeth, which is like a great setup because you know what's going on with him. He doesn't entirely trust her anymore. And then when they're in the scene, I thought it was a really subversive way that the writers gave us this like kind of tragedy in their relationship when she started to volunteer that information. Because the whole thing felt very hollow. It's like it's almost like you found out your wife has cheated on you and you guys are trying to have dinner and pretend like it didn't happen. And everybody's being a little too nice. And then she starts to volunteer the information. And that's when they cued the music and the violin starts to play a little bit. And I just was like, God, this is sad. And I thought it was going to be the isolated moment in the episode that we felt, mm-hmm. as we found out later. Obviously, that same tone carried through a lot of the episode. But I thought that was an amazing way to show the role reversal and kind of Clark's vulnerability in some ways mm-hmm. to her. The fact that he's not going to just pull a gun. The fact that he's not going to just try to get rid of her. And he says, because I trust her. It's like he trusts his fake wife more than his real wife.
Yeah, she's kind of in control of the relationship again now. It's like
weird, right?
He needs her.
Yeah.
I mean, I said it last week. I think I truly think, I don't know where that line is, but I think he has real feelings for her.
Yeah, 100%.
Like I don't know if he knows how to, you know, put that. It seems like their lines are getting really harder and harder.
Blurry, yeah.
And I think he loves her. That's sort of what I feel.
You saw it on his face when she starts to talk at dinner, and you could legitimately see it on his face. He's almost like, the look was like, I don't know what to do with you.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with you because I don't know what to do.
I didn't see that. I think he didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
It's an investment, you know, whether or not it started from a genuine place over time, just like what happened with him and Elizabeth, over time, there is an investment, even though Philip kind of comments on how it started for him, with him and Elizabeth, and we'll touch on that later. It's interesting to see that, you know, maybe it's not the same type of love that he has for Elizabeth, but there is a love there. There is a trust and a desire to protect there.
It's just like the movie She's All That. You know, at first, Freddie Prinze Jr. was dating Rachel Lee Cook as a bet, but then real feelings developed. Because
totally.
That's what happens when you spend time with somebody.
So what we're saying
But she found out about the bet, and then he had to overcome that.
Yeah.
You're saying it was just a bet?
Yeah.
Just a bet?
Martha's like, I'm just a bet? This is ridiculous.
All relationships. If you just start fake, you know, from the top, then eventually you will develop real feelings.
Eventually. Right. Eventually, every type of relationship, you will develop real feelings. You could hate the person eventually.
And Gabriel is Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, yeah. Gabriel is, I don't want to say, Usher? Was it Paul Walker?
It was Paul Walker.
Oh, it was.
Gabriel's kind of Paul Walker.
Roles reverse. Freddie Prinze is the good. Is the
yeah, right. Gabriel's kind of Paul Walker.
Paul Walker's
that she's all that comparison. I'm
But it was, no, it was a really surprising turn, one I didn't see coming, one that kind of keeps Martha in the mix in an unexpected way, but also really highlights the theme that we hit over and over again this episode, and one of the great themes of this show in general is, you know, that tension between love and country.
Yeah.
This is like, you could see this is how, like, you know, American traitors are kind of made. You know, it happens over time, and love. Love is a more powerful motivator than country to people.
Love is one of the most powerful things. Like, if you want to get somebody to do something for you... That's a pretty good way to do it. So
the sacrifice is, it's a sacrifice. Well, she made a sacrifice, major sacrifice of her, you know, job already, but right. Now she's way further down the rabbit hole. Now she's a spy.
Because she's in love with somebody she knows she doesn't even really know on some level.
That was an interesting point that I wrote down towards the end, especially with the whole Stan and Oleg scene. I was like, oh my god, they've all become Russian spies. Without even meaning to it, they've all gotten to this point where they're all working with the Russians in some way to help benefit the Russians. It was kind of funny to see, like, oh, the Americans.
We've got half the FBI.
On our payroll. So it's crazy.
Plus, who knows, right? Yeah, Gabriel alluded to janitors and whatnot. How many? Who knows how many other people in that office?
I think he was more alluding to like their people that they could get.
Yeah. Right.
But you know, with that said, Martha is a key asset. She is close to somebody was like, "He's not the head of the operation."
We were just talking about that regional office. To be clear, everybody.
So it is. I think she's the best bet that they have at this moment. You know, so they probably want to hold on to her for as long as possible.
Yeah.
But.
And now I'm thinking she might survive the season again. You know, you never know.
We shall see. That gun has been shown like 10 times. It's still in the drawer.
I'll stick with my prediction.
Yeah. Did anyone else have any other thoughts on Martha? So moving on to Todd and Hans.
I think it tied into the sacrifices you'll make for somebody you care about to get back in.
Oh, for sure.
To get back in. Can we just discuss... Just right off the bat, how he put up a good fight, Todd, with a bullet in his eyeball directly in there. Put up a pretty better fight than Daryl Hannah in, Kill Bill.
Well, I think Daryl Hannah's reaction was a little bit more realistic to how you would react
with an eyeball. But she had two pulled out.
That's fair.
He handled it really well. He was like, "There's a bullet in my eyeball, but I will fight you."
The first eyeball, I think she took okay. The second eyeball is what she really liked.
I feel like the writers of the show are just sort of like, "Okay, guys, we've already kind of set the precedent, so let's just try to keep beating ourselves. Like, let's just try to keep like the body in a suitcase episode, like." The pulling the tooth. Let's just try to get like worse and more gruesome and more uncomfortable.
How much can we take as an audience?
It's actually become a lot more violent. I noticed that because I'm not gonna lie, I used to kind of watch The Americans for the sex scenes and
stay for the gruesome bullet in the eye.
So this season, I'm like, oh, they don't have that much sex anymore. But there's been a lot more. Like violent scenarios happening in each episode. So it's interesting to see that.
But I like the way Americans does their action scenes because they are brutal and they are intense, but they're short. They're these short punctuating moments in these otherwise really long, you know, kind of dialogue driven episodes.
I will say the luggage scene was a little long for my taste.
Yeah.
I don't need to see like that many bones broken. But yeah, just
this was the right amount of strangulation timing wise.
Davis shoots sex for violence.
A realistic strangulation.
No, it was not. We were talking about that. Yeah. In real life, strangulation does not happen like that. You can't just hold somebody's like neck for like 30 seconds.
But again, we don't know what's going on with his body shutting down from the bullet. In the eyeball.
True story, guys. We're just like you. The conversations we have while watching it's way, way harder to kill someone in real life than that. Like,
that's
this is what I know about. I don't know it's about true. Necklacing. I know about how long it takes to strangle somebody. Don't
Josh
ask me what.
That's the one thing. That's the one thing I remember learning. I remember a multitude of things, but the thing we had to learn in stage combat. In order to learn stage combat, you have to know like how to actually do all those things, and then you just miss. And our teacher at one point stopped us, and he's like, "If you're going to do a strangulation scene, I don't want it to be fake. So you're going to stand on stage for about 5 to 7 minutes and you're going to fake strangle this person because that's how long it takes in real life. And we're all like, what? He's like, 2 minutes to lose consciousness and then another 5 for them to die. And I was like, oh my God.
I like the Game of Thrones method where you just smush the guy's face really
that's
quickly.
That's pretty much the best way to go. If you can just break the neck, that's probably
just the pop the eyeballs out.
So now you know how morbid that the Americans panel is.
I was going to say, although I didn't feel anything about that, but we both cried about the old lady.
Well, that was really sad, and we'll get to that. Yeah. I will say with Hans, I'm a freak of nature, because when he threw him down on the ground to start strangling him, I was like, God, I'm so turned on by Hans right now. And I was like, what is wrong with you? Well, it's springtime.
There's always
out there.
There's always been a thin line between the sex scenes and the action scenes of this show. The action scenes are supposed to feel intimate like that.
Yeah, so that was an interesting turn. It was nice to see Hans. I just get really hot all of a sudden. It was nice to see Hans.
That Hans, he really knows how to throw around.
Well, Hans,
his body.
What's funny about you say that is, like, are we allowed to curse on this?
Nah.
It's like the FX rule. We get like 2 shits, I think.
Oh, we get shits.
Why once? Because if you just use both of them, thanks, guys. Like the term fucker fight. Like the. Every time somebody in the show finds out that somebody else has done something or like somebody gets. I always feel like there's the stare that happens and it's that moment. And so when Elizabeth at the very beginning of the episode is looking at Hans and he's like, you can't use me anymore? She's like, not in that way. It was like, you guys, and then in the car, when he goes, I killed him, she goes, really? And they're talking. There's a part of me that's like, is she going to kill him? Or are they going to start making out? What's going to happen?
Next episode, something.
It's like Mr. and Mrs. Smith. It's like, totally. Okay, and we're fighting.
And then we're on the ground, and there's blood all over us and shards of glass.
There's a lot of those moments in this show, I feel like.
It is a very aggressive act, that sex. It's very aggressive. So, on that note, I thought that it was interesting to see Hans display that kind of violence because we hadn't really seen that from him before. We weren't sure if that was something he was going to be capable of.
Yeah.
And for him to pick, like, the hardest way to kill someone, I was like, dang.
Very messy. He's trying to do what Elizabeth did, you know, just a clean shot to the head, and it didn't work out like that.
Yeah.
Hans became an interesting character for the first time, I think, this episode. He hadn't really been doing it for me so far, but for one thing, I think this is the first time I realized he's in love with Elizabeth, right?
Yeah.
For sure.
He stepped up his game for her.
Yeah. Like, this is why he's doing it. He says it's all about, you know, fighting apartheid and stuff, but for sure he's doing
it. But he ends it by saying it's for her.
Yeah. This was his John Cusack moment. The bullet in the eye was his, you know...
But you had the inkling, right? You just weren't sure.
I had the idea, but it was really clear at this point.
Yeah, agreed.
And now it's like, you know, all of a sudden he's, you know, he's like a straight up murderer now. That was just a full on murder scene, him killing this other college student.
Yeah.
All for
he's a spy.
He's kind of a spy. He's like a spy in training. But this wasn't his mission. He wasn't supposed to do this.
Well, now all of our predictions about Todd, like, coming after Hans, are shot. And, you know, kudos to Hans for just being so much more badass than I think we gave him credit for.
And he has a sweet accent.
His accent got a lot. Hans was just doing it for me this episode.
You're into Hans.
It's all about that Hans.
Hans, buddy. Actor whose name I should know offhand. If you want to come on the show,
Hans.
You take my spot in this chair.
Yeah!
Hans, buddy.
I'm single. Anyways, so any other notes on Todd? I'm really getting hot. It's just hot in here. Yeah. Summertime, spring.
Nah, I don't know. Any other thoughts on that?
No, I really want to get into the...
So, we'll dash through Oleg, Stan, and Zenita. Oh, man.
He hit him too hard. He did that thing where, you know, you're like, you're in it together.
Right.
He was smirking the entire time he was talking to him in the car. I thought that was hilarious.
He hit him real hard with that gun.
Yeah. Hey, early in the season, he was going to kill him. And now this is the BitX Best thing.
Now they're
sharing a beer. That is such a male thing.
Yeah.
Okay, one moment I'm going to kill you. Next move, let's have a beer.
Share a beer. Yeah, I mean, this whole, like, I know I've said it, the whole storyline. I'm trying to, so he says... If we get Zenaida, he's like, we got to try this thing. It'll be dangerous. It's super dangerous if we get caught, but it's our only chance to get Nina back. How does that work?
Yeah. I don't know how this is connected to Nina anymore at all.
I was just making sure that I wasn't the only one who was totally in the dark about that. I was like, did I forget something from last episode? Is there some operation where they can...
Well, he mentioned something when he first approached Oleg about Zenaida and about possibly how her being a spy might be able... There might be a way for them to swing it to get...
Like trade.
Well, the thought was trade. I think it's a trade. Yeah, I think they were going to, if it turns out she was, then they just hold her.
Train a notable political traitor for a completely irrelevant, like, imprisoned yes, woman.
Right. It's not a fair deal. You have to throw in a first-round pick in another draft.
It's not a great plan.
But what did Oleg say that he wanted to do instead? He wanted to... Is he going to become a spy that... He's the double spy for them now. I can't remember what he told that chick.
I did put together something else that had been on my mind, which is why is Oleg's dad trying to get him back to Russia? Mm-hmm. Now it kind of makes sense, because if Zineta is actually been a Russian spy this whole time, and Oleg is trying to like uncover that, and the Minister of Railways probably knows that because he's high up enough, so that would be why he's trying to get like his meddling son out of it.
But the last time Oleg commented on Zineta, he was talking to the new Nina, right. Russian lady, whose name I cannot remember.
The new Nina, that's all I call her.
And he was saying how he wanted to play the Americans. Like, he was saying, well, what if we did have a double spy? What if we had somebody who gained the trust of the Americans? And she said, well, we don't have anyone like that. And he's like, well, what if we did? And so I thought he was kind of going off of the thing of him turning someone or doing that to a Stan.
Yeah.
So I guess... I don't know why. I think his dad's just like a control freak.
It might be, but I've got a feeling it's connected. Mm. I've got a feeling it's connected somehow.
It's not just a dad wanting his son around.
Yeah, I don't think so. Not at all.
Love.
It's not just love.
It's not just love.
One minister of transportation wanting his son around.
This whole plot full of double and triple agents is super complicated.
Yeah.
But I like it because there's a purpose for it. I think it's so complicated that even the players don't know exactly why they're doing the things they're doing anymore at this point. Mm. Like, I think Stan is so far gone with this Zineta plot that he doesn't realize he's like attracting suspicion around the FBI office. Like, I'm going to get into it more in predictions, but I think he might have given himself
away.
There
was a look.
Yeah.
You saw, we all caught that look in the office after he left.
So I thought about this because, so there's the initial moment when the pen's discovered, last episode. Mm-hmm. The episode before that. And they discover, and it's Adderholt and Gad and Stan. And the three of them are standing around, and they all sort of look at each other. Like, mm-hmm. Did you know about this sort of a thing? You know what I mean? Like, what do we do?
Yeah.
And at that moment, and we've talked before that Adderholt's maybe, like, a little fishy. But then this episode, you definitely got a little bit more of a sense that, yeah, people maybe are looking at Stan, and maybe... Because I remember at the beginning of this season, we were talking on this panel, that we all said Stan's a really good FBI agent. And then about three episodes ago, we all agreed he's a terrible FBI agent.
I've never ever said Stan's a good FBI agent. I've always said he's, like...
Here's the beginning of the season, I remember.
No, it wasn't me.
I think it was after... He did have a big victory early in the season, right?
I said he was a middle management for life FBI agent, but here's the thing. To your point... You screw up once, and you're an idiot. You screw up twice and you're a suspect. You
right.
know what I mean? Like, you don't just drop, you know, the pen thing is fine. Okay, maybe he's an idiot and it happened behind his back. Now somebody gets to her his watch.
How could he not think that was suspicious? Like, there's no way that people weren't going to look at him and be like, you didn't do your job.
He knows he's on the hot seat for sure now.
I mean, if you want to connect the dots that accuse Stan of being a spy in some way, they've been setting this up the entire series. I mean, remember when Stan killed that Russian spy in season one? Super suspicious.
He checked up with a Russian informant early on. I mean, he's definitely...
This is why I would say I would never say that he was a good FBI agent.
Middle management for life.
That's so cunning.
He was mostly a good FBI agent until this season, and I think it's clear his personal life is supposed to be taking a toll on him. Like, he's not as sharp as he used to be, maybe.
I'm going to say that he was always a bad FBI agent because he's had two Russian spies living across the street for him for the past, like, 3 years.
Fair.
He got taken over by Nina about after a year being with her. He's tacky, and he's just not good at it. I'm sorry.
I want to say, I would love to see, you know, there's probably like a website where you can dig deeper. I want to see the FBI grades of him every year, like the notes. Like, Stan, he's a little sloppy. He gets a little loose around women.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Let him leave anything in the office.
He just seems really sad all the time.
Yeah, he's sad. Yeah, he's not a positive guy.
No. Adderholt is a very good FBI.
He probably has high marks.
He picks up on stuff like that.
Yeah. He's overly ambitious, it probably says on his report card.
He noticed the pen. No one else did.
I actually think that the writing on this show is too smart for that. They're trying to suggest that. I think Adderholt's going to turn out to be... Well, I mean, we can get predictions. But.
Well, I think I already mentioned that he's probably still a spy.
Yeah,
but
right,
that doesn't
exactly,
mean he's
right.
not a great FBI agent. You know, he can be in it. Yeah.
And by the way, we know that Gad wasn't the head of the FBI. That guy, his ranks are pretty low, too. He's Because now he's probably got a C-plus rating.
Yeah, I don't know how the FBI works, okay? Like, I'm not supposed to, right?
No.
Right, is he... What, is Gad the admiral of the FBI? Yeah. I think so. That's the decision.
Yeah,
right.
That's how it works, right? Yeah. President.
Yeah. You
know, emperor, conqueror.
Yes.
On that note, let's get to the nitty-gritty of Betty.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Her name was Betty, I confirmed it. Yeah. Played by Lois Smith.
Lois, yeah. I just looked up some of her credits. It's unbelievable. She was in East of Eden with James Dean.
James Dean,
1955.
56?
55. Wow. She was also in, here's some of the hits, Five Easy Pieces, Fatal Attraction, Fried Green Tomatoes, Midnight Run, and I remember her more recently. Yeah, True Blood. But also, this one was in my head, Minority Report.
Oh,
the one with Mary Harding.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you're right.
Yeah. IMDb, not me. Get no credit for that. But yeah. Oh God, what a tour de force. Man.
So every year when you're watching like the Emmy, you know, nominations for writing, you always see like the show that gets nominated for the Emmy, and it's some episode, you know, episode 7, some title you've never heard of. I remember when I used to be a big fan of Sopranos, looking at which ones had been nominated and trying to think about what makes that episode the one. Mm. Why is it the one? And watching, thinking about this, because obviously it was a very effective episode, and I was emotionally very affected watching it. It says so much about what the show's supposed to be about. That conversation, the whole thing from beginning to end, and the way she reacts to it, and then her little rant about the, you know, you're evil and so evil people doing all this stuff. I think it's like, this will be nominated for an Emmy. It might even win.
Well, a quick sidebar about the Emmys, because for a more technical reason, I think you're right, which is that the episodes that usually get submitted for Emmys are the episodes that can stand alone the best.
Exactly.
Because,
you can watch this not knowing.
Most people haven't seen every season, every episode of every show. Yeah. This really did stand alone pretty well. They spent a lot of time kind of with Elizabeth and Betty, and if you didn't know, even if you didn't know the backstory, you could still understand why this was so effective.
It was still a great scene.
Yeah. I also really like that, you know, this was, I mean, not the first time, but usually it's sort of the other way around, where Philip's got to be, you know, cajoled into killing somebody, maybe. Mm. And now the last 2 weeks,
he's been the hardcore.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, you know, and this, I mean, you know, fine. So, you know, the last one was fine. The Todd ended up getting killed anyway. But, you know, this woman really, really affected Elizabeth on a really, really deep level that we haven't seen before.
Yeah, you know, we started seeing Elizabeth at her most pragmatic, just kind of, you know, we've seen her working with Hans all season, and she just goes, listen, Hans, you're gone. Sorry, you screwed up, buddy. It's cold. It's over just like that.
At least she didn't kill him.
No, yeah. she didn't kill him, but she was, you know, still pretty ice cold.
Yeah.
Like we're used to seeing Elizabeth, but you know, which kind of set up nicely when this woman really got to her.
I was shocked to see them, for one, appear in that facility not in any type of costume.
Yeah.
So for them to just go in as themselves, and then, because I know even with them, it was at the end of last season when they had that truck driver, and they were incognito, or I can't think of word that I'm trying to think of.
Disguise,
thank you. And they had to pull over that truck driver, and they were deciding whether or not they should kill him, and Elizabeth was like, you have to, and Philip was like, I don't want to. So to kind of see that reversal happen, where Elizabeth kind of tries to plead for this woman's life, you know, because she's told her
very little
she didn't but plead too hard. You get the feeling that she's kind of like, she's talking about her husband and how he was in the army for 4 years and how that affected her.
Philip has no sympathy.
And Philip just was like, well, she just picked a bad time. Moving on. So it was interesting to see that kind of reversal. It was also interesting to have Elizabeth just be so honest, you know. And that was so scary as well,
so
because you just
sad.
Knew. And she knew as well.
I know. I think it's sad about their lie. The sad thing about their existence, Philip and Elizabeth, is that they can really only be honest with people they're going to kill.
Yeah.
You know, once that decision was made, once it was the woman, you know, Lois Smith was like, you're not going to let me go. Mm-hmm. Then it was like, well, now I can tell you anything about my life and really reveal myself and have a moment with another human being, even though I'm about to kill them. It was a really deep connection.
If I could try to, maybe this is a stretch, but trying to tie this into the title of this episode, you know, Philip and Elizabeth are kind of supposed to be robots. Being the most effective spies you could be means you can't have feelings. You can't be in love. You just have to execute for the good of the country. Mm-hmm. And so, but, you know, The title Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, the original, is kind of the idea, you know, do robots or do automatons have a soul? Yeah. And so do Philip and Elizabeth have a soul? I think it's shown over and over again that they do. Even if they do monstrous things, they can be really deeply affected if you catch them at certain moments.
And it's an excellent homage and reference to Blade Runner, just in the sense that that's such a classic and popular piece of work based on the book for Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
The director's cut.
Yeah. And I thought it was really interesting that as soon as she drops the "Where are you from?" and she says Russia, as soon as she says the line, your heart sinks. And yeah, it was an amazing moment that honestly was just so brutal, and you just knew
that she was gonna kill her.
And we all have moms. That was what was getting me. I don't know if you guys caught the exact, like, I'm assuming most people watching the episode are probably feeling the exact same thing. My mom is almost 70. I was watching this woman and just being like, I could not stop thinking about, like, my mom, what if she came across a spy? What would happen?
Yeah, I mean, it was really tough because that woman embodied, you know, your mother, your grandmother, that person who has done nothing wrong, you know, has done, it seemed like, you know, I'm just saying in the range of humanity, of people who don't deserve to die, they picked the person that we, you know, collectively feel like, not that person, like, let that person go.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting when Betty hit her with the line, you don't have kids, do you? And she, you know, and she, when it forced her to confront why she's doing this, and, you know, not about being evil, but also like having kids, you know, like, what are you putting into this world?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You have children, and this is what you do. Like, we're like disgusted.
Yeah.
That's an interesting point that she brought up. Because I think often we always assume that people who do evil things are incapable of having people that love them and of loving others. And it's a very black and white way of looking at the world, and it's not a true way of looking at the world. You know, and that's kind of what they always talk about. When you think of Philip and Elizabeth, the reason we root for these people and they do horrible things is because we see their humanity. We see them go home to their children. Mm-hmm. And that's a very realistic thing to realize, that there really isn't anyone who's purely evil, that people who have done horrible things still have people that love them, and they love other people.
Yeah.
You know, so...
But yeah, evil, yeah. I mean, I think that... I might be wrong. I think this is the first time anybody's explicitly called Philip or Elizabeth evil
on
the show.
It's the first time I remember, definitely.
Yeah.
But that is true. That is what evil people tell themselves when they do evil things.
Yes, it is.
I did like, though, that she... I was picturing how the actual murder was going to take place. Mm-hmm. I like that she gave the sweet old lady the pill option. The slow, painless pill option.
That's not really painless. It seemed kind of horrible. Like, I would have preferred a neck snap, but...
You would have?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, instead of the log slow, knowing you're about to die, for sure.
I don't know.
I mean, great. It gave us more time with her, but...
Knowing that she's capable of, you know, doing a quick kill headshot instead of the, you know, like, the messy Hans headshot.
I thought it was cute.
I think neck snaps are nicer.
I thought it was cute for a little old lady.
I mean, it was... It just seemed by the end to be painful. And that she was struggling a lot. And that was breaking my heart. I feel like...
Yeah.
If you're going to have to kill someone and you know you're going to have to do it, why make it any longer than it has to be? And yeah, but then again, with that said, if she had snapped her neck... Maybe she could have thrown it downstairs or something, but it would have made it obvious that someone was there.
I almost think it was because Elizabeth wanted to keep talking to her.
Yeah.
I think she was just fast, you know, like this woman.
That's messed up, Elizabeth.
It probably is to some degree, but you know, this woman is almost like, it's like a vision of her future. It's like a vision of her eventual death. Mm-hmm. They're for sure drawing the parallels between Betty and Elizabeth there, especially when Betty's talking about the fact that she was married twice, once for love, and then once, you know, then the second time is the time it really stuck. That's like what happened with Philip and Elizabeth, you know?
They also gave us the little carrot of, what does your mom do? And she says, she, blah, blah, works in an office. Mm-hmm. And that, you were supposed to connect that you're my mother in some ways.
Yeah,
we know that Elizabeth's mother's dying.
Yeah.
You know, that's happening.
I like your point, too, about their marriage sticking now. Philip and Elizabeth, their marriage is sticking now.
Yeah.
It was one of the lines that Betty said. I thought I wrote it down, but I didn't. Where she goes, you know, we stopped trying to do that thing where we try to make the person to the person that we want them to be.
Right.
And we accept who they are.
Martha did it for Clark real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Martha. But on that note, did you guys want to touch on Gabriel?
Yes.
And
we definitely
Philip
should.
Quickly?
That last scene.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to get, we've talked about this before, the Hank and Walt Breaking Bad confrontation in the garage, where he's like, you better tread lightly, and he confronts. I thought we were going to get Philip just saying, like, if you come after my family again, I'll kill you. Like, that's how I thought the episode was going to end.
That was the tone of his voice.
It's almost how it ended, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think they've been setting it up all season. Gabriel is kind of Phillip's, like, Margot Martindale. You know, like, Elizabeth really did not get along with her. And Phillip, at some point, clearly got along with Gabriel. At some point, there used to be trust there. But yeah, all these little manipulations and all these little ways Gabriel keeps getting under his skin. And
even with that would
drive anybody crazy.
Even with the Scrabble game.
Yeah.
I mean,
amatory. I just love words, you know?
Excellent.
Yeah.
Geode. That's a good word. That's a smart word.
He said wedlock means perpetual battle.
That was great. That was great. That was a great moment. Yeah. You know,
awesome.
I also, I love that, you know, we have been debating how Gabriel is playing Phillip versus how he's playing Elizabeth and which of them understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a really, you know, great indication he knows what's going on and he does not like it. You know, it's like he's been playing along really well through his son being, you know, over in Afghanistan and all these other things. And this was his way of saying enough, no more,
For the most part. He's been kind of aggressive with Gabriel. I wouldn't be surprised if, like, Gabriel pulls some crazy move on him.
Ooh.
We've always known that deep down, Phillip is going to put family first over over his country and his job and everything. Yeah. That's what he's ultimately
set it up
to.
For
sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm starting to get a pretty pretty well rounded prediction in my head for I think how
you
this
are?
Is going to end.
Oh
yeah,
my
it's
gosh.
Probably kind of a stretch. We can get to it in a second.
Do you have any thoughts on Gabriel and
no, I like that interaction, and I also like that he finally used the word love. I like that he said, "I love you, I love Elizabeth, and I love,
I love you."
Oh God,
that's what triggered him, right?
That was the trigger. I think it's really interesting. Also, that what's the word? Sorry, another Breaking Bad reference, but in the Jesse Walt relationship, it's in the last season. Does he say love or does he call him son?
Or son? Or you're
calls
right.
Him
it was
son.
That moment that broke him.
He
too.
Says son, and then Jesse breaks down. I think that's great. It's the same sort of thing, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting how they use love in this episode, you know, that Betty talks so much about her love for her husband as a way to kind of, one, at first kind of plead for her life, and then kind of go to accept that she's going to die.
Accept her death, sure.
How Martha uses love as a way to kind of just get past that Clark is a traitor and not at all who she thinks he is.
And then at first Gabriel, you know, got Phillip on his side by using love kind of as his tool, as his weapon, but then Phillip eventually found a stronger love. I think that's what this is. I think Gabriel's threatened by Elizabeth.
Yeah. I have a quick question for what you just said, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You asked earlier, what do you think you know? What does Martha think she knows? who does she think Clark is? Like,
I think she thinks he is a spy.
Yeah.
I definitely think she thinks he's a spy.
No idea for who.
I don't think she knows that. You do think she knows that he's a Russian spy?
No, I wasn't nodding at that.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think she knows he's a spy, and she just cut herself off.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's like, I love you, so I'm going to just like not see.
Just like what Clark said last episode. Yeah. I'm the man who you married. That's got to be enough for you.
It should not be enough. It should not be enough. I just saw Bridget Jones' Diary, Martha, and if Daniel Cleaver wasn't enough for Bridget Jones, Clark shouldn't be enough for you. That's all I'm going to say.
Our movie references are on point this week.
It's a good one.
So on that note, any other final thoughts?
Just that I wish I had nailed the Paul Walker reference correctly.
I want to look up whether Frank Langella and Lois Smith ever worked in a movie together. That would be cool, right?
I mean, the two of them on here together.
We got to get Lois Smith. Lois, if you're listening, which you are, I'm sure you listen to this. What is Lois Smith's Twitter handle?
I would be so fascinated to talk to her after watching that.
Yeah. To a future Golden Globe winner?
Yeah, no. If
the
it's
oldest, me, maybe the oldest. Golden
my heart's
Golden
never world. Shattered so much watching television before.
If it's, if it's not clear by our discussion, she's so completely, totally nailed that scene.
Yeah,
one of the best
beautiful.
Acting performances I've seen on TV.
What actor doesn't want to get to die well too?
Right,
you know?
To die so beautifully.
Jeez.
Yeah. On that note, shall we go into predictions?
Mm.
Yeah.
And now you're after Buzz TV.
Okay. I always start off with
okay. Me. Yeah, we always start with
I have
me.
A question.
I feel like I have the weakest ones. I want to hear what you guys say first. Okay,
I have a question before we do predictions, because I know every week we say something, and some things come true, some things don't. Our predictions don't have to, like, connect to each other week to week, right?
Just
if I predicted something last week that's going to happen by the end of the season, can I predict something completely different?
No, yes. You have to create an eternally consistent mythology with all your predictions.
Your continuity has to be on point. No, you can do
what you
want.
Can we do that? Boo. Again. No. Okay.
No.
Right, no.
My prediction is My prediction is the prediction music will come on. My prediction is that Paige isn't going to confront them this week.
Next episode, they're going to sandbag us again.
It's never going to happen.
The same preview every.
Let me make a
and you got sucked in and use that for your prediction last week, like a cheater.
My prediction is that Elizabeth is. What's his name?
Hans.
Hans is going to make a move on her in a sexual way next week.
Mm. Yeah, you can complicate things. I can see it.
Yeah.
I think next episode is just going to start with Jim and Kimmy like going at it. Like we're just going to like we've been like leaving the storyline alone for three episodes. So it's just going to be like a shock moment. Like guess what? This is just happening, and you have to deal with it.
Mm, yuck.
That's gross.
Like, where is Kimmy? Seriously, what's going on?
I don't care, man. I don't want to see her again.
I think that there's going to be like a sweet, sweet like total change in tone. Philip's going to kill Gabriel. He's going to kill him. He's going to go rogue. Stan's going to find out. Stan's going to be the guy that finds out. And there's going to be Stan's going to have to like decide. What does he do? How does he handle it? And I think Gabriel's going to, or I think Philip's going to go rogue. I think that's what's going to happen.
Huh.
In season five, maybe. Yeah,
yeah, maybe it'll take a long time. But
I think I predicted like an episode ago that they were both going to go rogue. So it'd be interesting to see if I guess rogue is something that might happen. I think to merge you guys' two predictions that Elizabeth isn't going to react to Hans until Philip starts to have sex with Kimmy.
Right.
And then it's inevitable. It's gotta happen. She might turn to Hans.
It's like, who can go younger?
And it's just like...
Don't
you know
make it a competition, Dad.
They have been lacking on the sex scene. So if you don't... I don't really care that much for the Philip and the Kimmy, but if you want to show the Elizabeth and the Hans, I'd be okay with
that. You want full frontal Hans?
No.
The episode just starts with full frontal. Yes. Everyone at FX gets fired.
Like, it zooms out. It starts like really... What is that?
Joel Fields is like, yeah, this is the screening cut.
Maybe they'll
put this one on the air.
Maybe they'll make Hans and Kimmy hook up just to screw with you.
Yeah.
Like, how are you going to feel?
That's our new boy. This is my new South African boyfriend.
Maybe he will.
He's an exchange student at the high school.
I feel more comfortable with that. At least they're closer in age. Anyways, even though she's still underage. Okay, so, Matt, where can everyone find you?
You can not find me at my apartment, please. let's stick with online. Matt Ritter 1 on Twitter and YouTube, Matt Ritter Comedy.
Josh Richman. I'm at joshrichman.net. I'm on Twitter at Radio TFB.
Ben Bateman. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ben Bateman Media.
And I'm Adrienne Snow. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Miss Adrienne Snow. All right, guys, that about wraps us up for the Americans After Buzz After Show. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next Wednesday.
Tweet us later. Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.